Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Tales from the Bar. I'm really happy you're here to start your weekend off right. I'm your host, Jen Noga, and today we're joined by an overall amazing human being, Abby Farabelle. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, and enjoy your time at the bar.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Tales from the Bar. I am here with Abby. I'm so excited. My sweet sunflower. She can go ahead and introduce herself.
Oh, hello, everyone. My name's Abby. I use she, her pronouns, and I am a friend of Jen's.
Yeah. Abby's kind of like my sister almost. I know you have sisters, but you are definitely like a sister.
You're a friend sister to me, too.
Oh, yes. It's reciprocated.
Heck yeah.
So I start off all of my interviews when I interview somebody for the first time with this very simple question. What is your favorite 90s bop?
Ooh, oh my gosh. Why are they all blanking me right now?
You can pull out your phone if you need to.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to... Oh, I feel so under pressure because I did not know this would be a question.
Oh, I tell everybody that it's easy and then they're like, this isn't easy.
This is like the hardest question I've ever been asked, but I can give you an answer, but I just gotta do my research. Oh, I do like Wonderwall by Oasis.
Wonderwall is a good choice.
That's a really good one. Yeah, I think that's the one. I can look at rollingstone.com for 50 best songs of the 90s, but I think I'm going to go with Wonderwall for time's sake purposes.
Okay. And then since we are at the hypothetical bar, we're not actually at a bar because Abby doesn't live by me anymore, which is so sad. It's tragic, really.
Shedding a tear.
What is your favorite drink?
I always go for a lemonade, personally.
I had lavender lemonade today, and there wasn't a lot of lavender in it. So I think I'm going to have to add some lavender syrup to it and try to get that little lavender flavor.
That's so funny that you bring that up because I actually tried lavender lemonade for the first time last week and it was very nice. I did not know what to expect. Whenever there's like a flavor that's also an essential oil, I get a little concerned that it's going to be overpowering, but it was very soothing and comforting.
Right now, I'm really big on dragon fruit lemonade, which has been my go-to when I go to Heinen's because they have them in like the really fancy bottles. I wish I had the bottle with me, but they have like really fancy bottles and, you know, it says organic on it. And it's like, so like, it's such a white person move of me to just have organic dragon fruit lemonade.
But do you like it? That's the important question.
Yeah, I do. It's my silly little drink.
Oh, good. That should be a question for, instead of like, what would you be drinking at the bar?
What's your silly little drink? Maybe that'll be my question for next season.
Next season. Ooh.
Do you have a silly little drink order? Because I can tell you what mine is.
I definitely have one. I guess my silly little drink order is, because I'm going to count it as a drink. When I order a chocolate milkshake, I always specify it has to be made with chocolate ice cream. Because there have been times when people will make it with vanilla ice cream and chocolate syrup. And that is not it. A chocolate milkshake is chocolate ice cream with milk.
Interesting. Okay.
That's my silly little drink, I'd say.
My silly little drink is I walk from my building to Dunkin' pretty much almost every workday, and I get a large refresher. Depends on the day of what like flavor I get, but it's made with oat milk. And then I walk back to my building and I'm like drenched in sweat because the walk back is all uphill.
Oh.
But
you work out for that drink.
I know. It's better than the Starbucks because they closed the Starbucks by the architecture building. And they turned it into a bagel place and I can't eat at the bagel place. So the nearest Starbucks is a half a mile down the street.
Yes. My vague mind map of Kent State's campus is coming back.
Yep. But I think I'm going to get Starbucks tomorrow because I have a meeting with SAS. So it'll be a fun time. I'll get my Trenta strawberry acai pink drink with oat milk because I'm feeling really fancy and I'm going to spend like $5 on it, but it's fine.
Worth it.
Mm-hmm.
SAE meeting.
It is. So since a lot of the times I don't necessarily know the person I'm interviewing, I have like a long list of questions I want to know, but we know each other pretty well. How did we meet exactly? Because I don't remember. I just remember one day you were just there and then.
Are you ready for this trip down memory lane?
Yes.
All right. The scene was 2018. Fall semester. It was Olsen dorm lobby for an America's Got Talent watch party.
Ah, yes. The AGT watch parties.
Heck yeah. And I don't know what you were wearing at the time that the watch party started. I feel like it was me and like three other people, a bunch of dudes. And I didn't know any of them, but we would just watch America's Got Talent together and then leave. And I always remembered you because you had very choreographed, like planned, maybe choreographed's not the best word, detailed and colorful outfits. Like you stood out like a sunflower from the get-go because everyone else was wearing like PJs because the watch party was at like 8 p.m. or they were wearing the shirt that they wore the other day. Like no one looked fresh at this viewing party, but you always looked refreshed. And it was like a very nice, refreshing take because then you would comment on the people who were like participating in the show. We met because one day I was also live commenting on the show and we agreed at one of, I think it was like a magician.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of which magician it was, but it doesn't really matter.
There's like three magicians at least every season and they're all still, but
you know, they're all right. But the singing is where it's at.
I go for the dancing personally.
Interesting.
I can always watch a dance group.
Do you remember that girl? I forget her name, but she was a ventriloquist and she sang songs through her puppets.
Yes, she won.
She did.
I was proud of her. There was a magician. There were two magicians that won America's Got Talent recently.
I have not been keeping up and I feel like a fake fan.
Oh, it's okay.
I'm such a fake fan.
It's one of those shows that you can like tune in and watch an act and then you don't have to tune in again until the finale just to see.
Yeah.
Really there.
Just keep up with it on Twitter. But I think I unfollowed all of the judges because I was just like, I don't care. So I just keep like scrolling.
Once Howard Stern left, I was kind of sad because Simon Cowell got soft. So they don't have a hard judge anymore.
Really? I think Simon is like still the hard judge by comparison.
He's tough in comparison, but it's like I don't have a really good analogy for this, but I would just say if you compared him to other tougher judges, he would be the weakest then.
Yeah. In my opinion. I guess he gets soft in his old age.
That, and he had a son.
Yeah.
Obsessed with One Direction. Like he's seen his peak, you know?
Yeah. If you could go on AGT for like anything, what would you want to go on for?
This is a solid question. I would do dancing. Now, it wouldn't be choreographed, but there's been unchoreographed dancing before. And I think I would jam out to Mr. Brightside.
That's so specific and I love it.
Thank you. I would probably do...
like an interpretive dance.
I was just going to say, I actually did an interpretive dance of Mr. Brightside at my sister's wedding. So I would probably do the same dance, but it's very spur of the moment. The music and the like symbols of what my body shapes should be doing to the songs just come in that instant. So it's possible that it wouldn't be the exact same dance people saw at my sister's wedding. It would be a new take.
You would have to tune in to find out. Give them the view money.
Yeah, and I'd have people text to vote. If I could have a code, if I could say what my code would be instead of them assigning one to me, it'd probably be like, oh, I put a lot of pressure on myself to answer the question. Actually, I can't think of that right now. But if you have a text code, text me it.
Put it down in the comments.
Yeah, subscribe, like, share.
Let's beat the YouTube algorithm. So we've done a lot together. I'm trying to think of where I want to start with this. The first thing being like our first big like thing together was More Than a Body.
Yes.
So if you would like, because you weren't the president at CMU, but you were like the advisor kind of.
Yeah, like the founder for it. And then I student advised that group.
So tell me, because hopefully we're going to have Megan on the show and she can like explain it like
heck yeah,
a little more in depth. But like from your perspective, what is More Than a Body to you?
Ooh, I always describe More Than a Body as a mission of self-love for survivors of sexual trauma and learning the different ways that they are more than a body through meditation, self-expression, and general community.
What has been your favorite like activity that you either did like at Kent or at CMU?
I really liked the Take Back the Night March at Kent. They did a very similar version of that march during the daytime at CMU, which was nice, but I felt like at Kent doing it at night was even more empowering because that's when female identifying persons usually feel most unsafe, but then you're in a group shouting things about how it's your body, your choice, and it's your general autonomy that no one has a say over, and all these other chants that are very empowering for a survivor.
What was like the process going through like starting a chapter? Because I feel like it's very different than just founding, like obviously Megan is the founder of More Than Body and also a very dear friend of ours. And she started it at Kent versus like starting it somewhere else. Like, what were you like worried that you weren't going to have like the same kind of, I don't want to say support, but like there wasn't that built-in community quite yet. So you had to build it yourself.
Yeah, I was nervous that for starters, the students wouldn't have a need for it. I was worried that it was something for whatever reason that only people at Kent had experienced and needed. And for my own beliefs at the time at CMU, I thought maybe there were enough services and resources available that this wouldn't take with students, especially this all happened during the pandemic. So it was even more difficult because you couldn't meet face to face. So I had a very up and down trial and error kind of process to establish the CMU chapter. But I basically was able to find interest by being a part of another organization on campus called Organization of Women Leadership. And it was 40 plus female identifying students on Zoom that they would meet like once every Wednesday. And one day I reached out to the president and asked if I could give a spiel about More Than a Body, saying how it was only like going to be 5 minutes. And I just wanted to gauge interest. And at that point I had created a CMU More Than a Body Instagram page. So if anyone did want to like follow up with me, they knew my email from my presentation, but they could also follow us on social media. And then I could gauge that. And between that presentation, and then I did a few others to maybe two or so other organizations, I was able to find 3 e-board members, which is what I needed in order to establish the organization, and then had over 115 followers on social media within a week or so to gauge interest. So that really hit the point home to me that there was a need for this on campus, and many people were reaching out, wanting to help out or collaborate in the future. And then we found our faculty advisor shortly after, and then became an organization the following semester.
That's so cool. Cause I know that like when I was given the reins, like it was already established, you know, there were like certain criteria I had to meet, and then the pandemic happened, and then everything kind of like went to poop. But
yeah,
it's definitely More Than a Body, like really like did like change my whole like trajectory, I feel like, in college, or like I didn't necessarily have a group of people who had the same experiences, even though it wasn't the same exact experience. It was like a shared experience, and you know, people were chronically ill, and I didn't have like that kind of community going into college. Whereas like now, like I found like some of my people through it. So I'm always really thankful for More Than a Body.
Same. And I knew it was an organization for me when I saw the table with sunflowers.
Yeah.
What's the organization fair on Kent's
Blast campus? Off.
Blast Off. Yeah. And it was just Megan and her buzz cut. And I think, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the name of the other person who was there. It was just them two. And then their sign that said More Than a Body, and you could post with the dry erase boards that said, I'm more than a body, I am a, and then fill in the blank. It was very cool. And then I really liked Megan. And I remember she interviewed me to be part of the organization's e-board at the weaving part of Kent's campus, because she was like in between projects and didn't have time to leave the studio. So I met her and we just had an informal conversation. And then the rest was history.
Best history.
Yeah.
So I have on here Stranger Things, because you said you wanted to talk about Stranger Things.
I was so hoping you would do this.
Abby and I watch Stranger Things virtually, like together. And Abby does not do scary things. So I had to narrate a lot of what was happening. How would you rate my narration skills first off?
You were a 10 out of 10. I was given detail of who was saying which lines, what the scene setup looked like. And I feel like even the colors of the scenes, like, oh, it's dark and gloomy, or it's like, oh, it's outside and bright today. And I was like, okay. It was very good. Very well described.
Very good at making sure the scary parts did not come through.
They didn't. Yeah. I had a tight two-hand blocking the screen approach for the scary scenes.
Yeah. So what were your... Okay, spoiler alert for Stranger Things, if you haven't seen it, although it's been out for quite a while, so I'm sure that if you haven't seen it, it's probably been spoiled for you. I got spoiled within the first 6 hours of it being out.
That's wild.
I know. I woke up and somebody messaged me on Twitter and they're like, oh, how are you feeling about Eddie's death? And I was like, haven't seen it yet. I was waiting for Abby.
Yeah. Oh, that's sad.
But it's okay. I got a really good TikTok out of it and it got like 700 likes. So
We're trending.
In the end, was it really that bad? But it did hurt. It did hurt when I like saw the scene. But then like I didn't cry. I didn't cry the second time when I watched it with you.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I did cry. I watched that scene in particular. Just so I could like get it over with. And I was a mess.
I remember you texting me about it.
Yeah, I think I sent you a Snapchat. I was like, I'm in tears. I'm not going to tell you what happens, but it's bad.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What are your predictions for season 5, since it's going to be the last season?
This is a really good question. Sorry, I thought I saw a dog just like run through my very small backyard, and that does not make sense because it's fenced in. So I was just a plastic bag. Anyway, my predictions, I've seen a few fan theories, and I believe one in particular, which I think I even sent to you, which is that Eddie will come back as a vampire. I refuse to believe he died, and I have a few reasons why. We never saw, like, we saw Dustin holding Eddie, but we didn't see Eddie's burial. And I just think that's a little sus. We also didn't see how the rest of the gang got back to the real world from the upside down, because Eddie had cut the sheet thing or like yanked it down. So there was no literal tie to the real world when the gang all got back together. There were also clues throughout that Eddie has the bat tattoo and he sort of almost looks like a vampire as it is, because he has like an aversion to the sun. He's always hiding and doing his own thing. And for those reasons, I believe our man Eddie is going to come back as a vampire. I don't think it will end well for him if he does come back as a vampire. So it will be still a very gut-wrenching scene or sequence of events. But that's one. The other thing is, I love Max so much. Dare I say, more than the rest of the cast. Max is so good, but I don't think she's going to make it. I think she's going to make it for the first half, and we're going to be like, yes, that's our queen, a fellow ginge we love to see. But then I think it's going to go
sideways.
Sideways. Thank you. When Vecna does his thing, and I think Will is attached to it all. And I also don't think Will's going to make it. If he does, I would be very surprised, but that boy needs a lot of therapy, a lot of self-love, and a lot of attention from his friend group that seems to be continuously disbanding from him ever since he came back, which I don't really understand.
Yeah, I don't know. He needs a hug, first and foremost. He needs like a really good hug. I'm very deep in the Eddie Munson fanfic tag, like too deep right now. because that's how I'm choosing to cope. And I liked this. I read this one fanfic where they actually put Eddie in witness protection program, like the witness protection program or something like that. And cool. I think that's where, if he does come back, that's like where he'll be. And they just like, cause like you would think that they would be more upset about their friend dying. And then everybody's like, oh, like we're just processing. Like Dustin, you know, like he tells his uncle that he's dead and he gives him the guitar pick and stuff like that. But I think that they probably put him in witness protection, probably for, you know, the satanic panic reason that people are like, he's a cult leader and blah, blah, blah.
That's a really good rhyme. I totally forgot that that was something he was a part of. Also, may I add, Jason's death was the most wave of a wand, you blink and you miss it type of scene. Like they was very anticlimactic for the character that was causing a lot of issues for the gang.
Yeah, definitely. He was also in Teen Wolf. I don't remember if I told you this.
I think you did tell me this.
Cause I was like, he looks so familiar. He looks so familiar. What do I know him from? So I Googled it and they're like, oh, he was in Teen Wolf. He played one of the assassins in season 4. Yeah. Mm-hmm. With the Deadpool, which I think was season 4. Cause then you had, yeah, it had to have been season 4 cause Liam was in it. And
yeah.
I was like, oh. My dad was like, how did you not know this? He's like, don't you have an encyclopedic memory of Teen Wolf? And I was like, to an extent.
Yeah.
Everything after 3B is crack to me.
Good or bad?
I choose to believe that it just is like somebody's fan fiction. Like they ended it at 3B and then somebody got a hold of like all of the rights and just kept writing. Because like... After a certain point, it just kind of goes downhill, especially when Dylan O'Brien wasn't in it.
Oh, I think I stopped watching after that. But I was going to say, because Void Styles, that was season 4B.
That was 3B.
It was 3B? I Googled it the other day. I thought it was 3B.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, then your verdict still stands then. Because I was going to say, as long as it goes to when Void Styles happened, because that was one of the best villains for the entire series that I had ever seen, then your statement stands. And I was going to say for the other part too, about Stranger Things and the comment about not knowing that character was from Teen Wolf, I could not understand how I knew the character that played Vecna, but not as Vecna when he was the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Name was in that one, technically. Yeah. So I Googled it because I was like, his face is so familiar. And I know him from Shadowhunters, the movie, The Mortal Instruments. But when I Googled it, because I don't even think the part 2 was out yet. So I think it was spoiled for, like, someone either knew in advance and had written in Wikipedia and then spoiled it for anyone who Googled this question. But they were like, oh, that character or that actor plays The Mortal Instruments. Someone from Twilight, which I had no idea and did not recognize him from. And then he plays Vecna 1 and this other character. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that those were interlinked. And then it was like the episode right before they like exposed that identity for him. So I felt scammed on that.
Yeah. So speaking of sequels, because my friend Lauren and I, we recorded an episode yesterday. And one of the things we talked about was Teen Wolf. And the Teen Wolf movie. So what are your predictions for the movie? Like, what do you think is going to happen? Because everything's been so vague that, like, I don't really know. I don't have an idea of the plot other than they're bringing back the Nagitsune without Kira Styles. And Derek has a kid. And that's about all I know.
Oh, my gosh. Is that villain from Void Styles' season?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was a creepy villain. As much as I loved the Void Style season, I also had my eyes closed half the time because of how that villain looked. I don't mess with things that don't have eyes. That's why Vecna and his whole power thing was really difficult for me to do. But I didn't even know there was a movie coming out.
Really?
This is news to me.
It's going to be on Paramount Plus. It comes out in October. And I don't really know, like, basically it has to have been a time jump because Derek's kid is like 15 years old. Mason is a deputy or like a sheriff's deputy. Parrish is still in it. Tyler Posey came back. Hecklin's in it because he's a producer. Shelley Henning came back.
What about Holland?
I think she came back as well.
As she should. I'm not surprised that Dylan didn't go back, though, because I remember reading something that he said once he was in the Maze Runner, his sort of career took off because he was the main character suddenly. And for him to come back as a side character was a little bit difficult because it's kind of a demotion. And I remember hearing that Tyler Posey missed how he felt when he was filming Teen Wolf because he really related to that character. And I think he liked playing that role because then since it hasn't been as good career-wise for him.
Yeah. I also heard a rumor, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I know that the reason Arden Cho, who plays Kira, didn't come back was because they weren't going to pay her as much as Holland. And Dylan didn't come back out of solidarity.
My man, Dylan O'Brien, he can do no wrong. He may look like he does wrong in the movie. I'm not okay. But besides that, he's doing phenomenal in life.
I haven't seen that movie yet. It's on my list of things to do. But
not to spoil it, but have you watched Dear Evan Hansen?
No, but I know the plot.
It's the same plot, in my opinion. And I've seen TikToks saying that it's awesome. I think you sent me a TikTok.
I did.
It was accurate. It was the most accurate summary of a movie I've ever seen.
So other than it being like Dear Evan Hansen, like what would be your review of Not Okay?
Zoe Dutch is the main character, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. I really like her as an actress. And she does a very convincing job of being an unlikable main character. However, what really kind of threw me was in the intro for the movie, you know how usually there's a trigger warning and they're like, oh, there's light flashes, etc. So they had the same setup, but they just said, instead of light flashes, this movie contains an unlikable female main character. And I think that was it. There might be like another sentence after that. But for that being my like first taste of the movie, not even having watched the movie, like that was the first scene, it really sort of rubbed me the wrong way because there are plenty of movies where there is a male character that is not likable, but then you end up being charmed or swooned or they change him because he met a person and he feels better and wants to be better. But for a female character to be identified right from the get-go, oh, you're not going to like her. I couldn't tell how to feel about that. Because on one hand, it's like they're taking ownership of the idea that you're not supposed to, and that's okay, versus planting that seed early on before we even form our own opinions out of a person.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. So the acting was very convincing and the plot reminded me a lot of Dear Evan Hansen. So if I were to rate it out of 5, I'd give it like a 2.
Well, I'd say that's like pretty average.
Okay.
I haven't seen it yet, mostly because I haven't had the time to like sit down and like dedicate my time. But I've seen a lot of work that Dylan O'Brien has been in, Maze Runner being one of them. That's my comfort cast. Like there will never be another cast like the Maze Runner cast. And I don't know I'll send this to you, but they did a table read of the first movie and during like quarantine, like over Zoom. And it's so funny. It's so funny.
That's so cute. I'm so happy that they stayed in contact well after the movies were filmed, produced, and released.
Yeah.
Wow.
They make me so happy. Like everybody in that cast is so talented and they're so funny and they're going on to like do like bigger and better things. Like Will Poulter is going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Good for him.
Right? And everyone's like, oh my God, Will Poulter is so hot. How long has he been hot? And I was like, you guys suck. He's always been hot. And you guys have been You guys have been clowning on me for years for having a crush on Will Poulter. So Will Poulter, if you're listening, I am available.
Good stuff. I also like There's a BTS of the Maze Runner when they were in filming that they're all dancing.
Oh, they're doing the wobble.
I've never actually heard the song that was actually playing during it, because whenever I've seen it, there's been edits made to specifically slow it down and show them like shimmying their shoulders and stuff. And it just looks so fun. Whenever I see a group of people dancing, I'm like, that is a good time right there. And they are probably all very bonded.
Yeah. So as we're kind of wrapping up, and, you know, I talk to a lot of musicians and I go to a lot of concerts, and I know you go to a lot of concerts. Do you have a favorite concert that you've ever been to?
Yes, because I rank them every time I go. I wish I had a list of all the concerts I've been to. I know of all of them, but I just don't have a record somewhere. And I feel like that's something I need to work on next. But my favorite band is Imagine Dragons. So for my first concert, it was Imagine Dragons during Smoke and Mirrors. So it was their second album. And that's always going to hold a place in my heart, because it was the first one. It was when they sang It's Time. They brought out a big drum and had like an instrumental 6-minute piece to it. So they made, or no, not It's Time, Radioactive. And they made that. So Dan Reynolds, if you're listening, I would love to come on stage and hit that drum anytime. I have loved that song so much, and the extension, and then they have a violin and it builds and then it crescendos and it's so good. And so that was like my top fave. My second fave would be them again when I saw them for my fourth time, because it was an over 2-hour long performance, which is the longest concert I've ever been to. And they had a stage raise thing that their bassist or guitarist went on. And I believe it was also during Radioactive, and it was so intense and the lights were flickering and he was just soloing, and it was one of the best things I ever saw. It was awesome.
Didn't you also just see Big Time Rush?
I did see Big Time Rush. They made it in my top 10. They're probably number 9, because I never saw a boy band before, but I understand the hype now, because the choreographed dancing, even if you don't know the words, because they were playing some new songs that I have not familiarized myself with as much as Worldwide, Boyfriend, and The City Is Ours, to name a few. And if they're just dancing, though, even if you don't know the words, you could still dance along, because they're dancing while they're also singing. So you have one of two options to participate. And they all look great in their 30s.
They do.
I'm happy. The friend that I went with turned to me at one point and said, imagine if you created something 10 years ago, and then you said 10 years later, you know what, let's just go back and sing those again. And then it's to even bigger audiences that are honestly a little bit more age appropriate compared to when they first started, while also releasing new music, because now you have a fan base. They know what they're doing. I'll say that much.
They do. Did you watch the show?
I did watch the show when I was a kid.
I think if you watch it again as an adult, there's like a whole, it's like a whole other level of like comedy.
Really?
I think it's because like you're older. So like some of the jokes like don't go over your head. Michael watched it 4 times in a row.
Holy crow.
Like one, I think it was like last summer, 2 summers ago or something like that. And I tried to get my friend to watch it, who's older than me, because Megan doesn't like it and she's older than us. And I think it has to do with like where you land, like age wise, like whether or not you like it, because he did not find it funny. Mm. And I was like, I don't understand how you don't find this funny. There's not even like a laugh track. Like
it was just them being them trying to make it in Hollywood.
Yeah. It's the modern day monkeys.
It really is. Do you have a favorite rusher?
When I was younger, it was definitely Carlos, because I'm really into the himbo character. Like when you watch, if there was a himbo character, I am definitely in love with them, like 100%. But as I watched it again the second time around, I'm like, you know what? Kendall really just, there's something about him.
Yeah.
I think he aged the best as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Good. It's good to have different tastes. So then if we ever meet them and we're like, hey, we could seek out our own individual person.
Yeah, we're not fighting over the same person.
Yeah, because I am a Logan gal. But I cannot remember if he came out as bi or if he's gay now. So in the case that he's gay, my backup is James.
Interesting.
I thought James glue up a lot.
Where he goes like this all the time with the...
I forgot.
And then there's like the rock music who was like...
It was always such a trademark. Like, say what you want about Big Time Rush for not having a laugh track. They had those go-to sounds that when that happened, you knew what was what was about to go down, you know? But yeah, I liked Logan a lot because he had anxiety and I did not understand anxiety at the time, but I was always like, he's really relatable. And now I'm like, oh, that was a sign.
I get it now.
Nothing's going on.
So normally I ask people as we wrap up, what advice they would give people who are like, you know, just starting out in their field or their industry, but is there any advice that you wish you would have heard like coming into your young adult age that maybe you learned that you would want to impart on the people?
You have such good questions and they just range from seriousness to goofy that it's so hard to like be prepared for the more serious ones. I have really started getting into trusting your gut feeling. And I think that a lot of people have different approaches to building relationships or perspectives on situations. And as I've aged into my only 23 year old, but still old enough self, I realized that if I would have listened to what my body was telling me and trusting my gut, it really could have prevented me from certain more toxic relationships. And then other times could have been better to try something new.
Cool. So as they say on the game show Hot Ones, congratulations. You've completed the interview.
Why, thanks.
As you can use this camera, this camera, this camera. If there's anything that you would want to plug, now would be the time. If there's nothing.
Hi, it's Jen again. I want to thank you for listening to this episode. Since Abby doesn't have any projects to plug, she asks that you check out The Trevor Project. The Trevor Project is a nonprofit organization that focuses on suicide prevention efforts among LGBTQ+ and questioning youth. Through a toll-free telephone number, it operates the Trevor Lifeline, a confidential service that offers trained counselors. You can find support via their website, www.thetrevorproject.org, or check the description of this episode for more information. As for me, you can find Bar Buddies on Instagram at Bar Buddies Pod and tell me who you want to see on the show next. This episode was produced in collaboration with Voltage Live.